Endzone. Der DAZN NFL Talk.
Ich fange mal ganz leise an. Herzlich willkommen zu Endzone, der DAZN NFL Talk. Denn heute geht's um Geheimfavoriten.
So, jetzt rede ich wieder normal. Das klingt wie so ein Triebtäter, wenn ich ehrlich bin. Herzlich willkommen. Schön, dass ihr mit dabei seid bei Ausgabe 66. Heute geht's um Geheimfavoriten. Für die Saison 2025. Und damit ganz herzlich willkommen. Lieber Flo Hauser, haben uns auf drei Geheimfavoriten einigen können. Schau an. Freude, Eierkuchen.
Mein lieber Christoph Stadler, schön, dass du da bist. Ich hoffe, das geht nicht die ganze Folge so, dass du jeden zweiten Satz flüsterst.
Ich sehe tote Menschen.
Ja, hast du absolut recht, denn man muss ja immer sagen, in dieser Phase, wo wir uns befinden, ne, Ende März, ist das wirklich geheim. Da ist noch ganz viel Zeit bis zum Saisonstart, aber auf jeden Fall drei spannende Teams, die Broncos, die Bears und die Washington Commanders. Und auch dazu haben wir uns, ähnlich wie in der vergangenen Woche, Expertise geholt von drei jungen Männern, die rund um die Teams da drumherum schwirren, über die berichten, werdet ihr gleich erfahren. Ich kann schon mal so viel sagen, das sind sehr interessante Gespräche. Wir hätten, glaube ich, noch 8 Stunden machen können.
Oh ja, das hätte lang werden können. Noch länger werden können,
genau. Dementsprechend verlieren wir jetzt hier vorne aber nicht so viel Zeit, denn das wird wirklich spannend, wirklich cool und müssen erst noch ein paar Neuigkeiten abarbeiten.
Ich überlege gerade, wenn ich sehr leise reinspreche, hört man das dann in der Aufnahme danach überhaupt? Vielleicht war das einfach völliger Quatsch, was ich hier zu Beginn gemacht habe. Egal.
Wir werden sehen.
Hier kommen jetzt die neuesten Neuigkeiten.
Die News.
So, da ist einer runter vom Quarterback-Markt. Russell Wilson hat dann Dienstag unterschrieben bei den New York Giants. Ein Jahr, 10,5 Millionen sind garantiert, bis zu 21 Millionen sind möglich. Nachdem man davor schon Jameis Winston geholt hat aus Cleveland, 2 Jahre 8 Millionen, da war für alle eigentlich schon klar, der wird die Nummer 2 sein und die Nummer 1 wird im Draft geholt werden oder es wird Aaron Rodgers. Nein, es wird Russell Wilson. Spannend. Und was tatsächlich der lustigste Fact ist, Flo, ich weiß nicht, ob du das schon mitbekommen hast, ist mir gestern als erster in den Kopf geschossen. Wo ist Justin Fields gelandet? Beide Steelers Quarterbacks jetzt in New York.
Ja, beide im MetLife. Ach, witzig. Ja, mega.
Genau, stimmt. Selbst im selben Stadion
ja,
sogar.
Stimmt. In dem Stadion, wo Russell Wilson ja schon mal gespielt hat, Stichwort Super Bowl, aber darum soll es nicht gehen. Zunächst mal möchte ich an der Stelle sagen, Russell Wilson und Jameis Winston, der Weirdo Quarterback Room der NFL.
Oh, ja. Ja.
Das kann mittlerweile Jameis Winston ja absolut für sich Werbung gemacht in der vergangenen Saison.
Wenn die Sanders noch holen, dann ist es eine Show für Netflix oder sowas. Ja,
definitiv. Also da bin ich sehr gespannt, auch wenn Winston, wie gesagt, ja sehr viel positive Nachrichten bekommen hat mit seinen Speeches mittlerweile vor ein paar Jahren, Stichwort bei den Bucks, war das ja noch ein bisschen creepy. Der hat, glaube ich, auch viel geflüstert. Aber Russell Wilson bei den Giants, das war irgendwie absehbar. Sie haben sich sogar zweimal getroffen, auch irgendwie ein Meeting gegenüber 6 Stunden, habe ich gelesen. Und jetzt haben sie ihren Quarterback. Ich finde Russell Wilson top. Ich finde ihn immer noch gut. Ich finde, der kann auch so ein Team definitiv führen, wenn er denn die gleiche Sprache mit dem Coaching-Staff spricht und wenn sie sich was überlegen. Meine Bauchschmerzen sind nur so ein Stück weit, wenn man das mit seinen beiden Stationen vorher vergleicht, wo es jetzt auch nicht richtig glatt lief, aber bei den Steelers für ihn persönlich zumindest nach Verletzung ein bisschen besser. Ich bin mir noch nicht so sicher, Christoph, ich weiß nicht, wie du das siehst, ob er da so richtig reinpasst. Stichwort ja. Zusammenspiel mit O-Line, Skill-Player, Scheme, Play-Calling. Ich lasse mich gerne eines Besseren belehren, weil wie gesagt, Russell Wilson hat viel gesehen, das ist ein Veteran, der ist sehr erfahren. Ich finde ihn gut. Ob das wirklich passt, bin ich mir noch unsicher, aber ich meine, die werden es besser wissen, wenn man sich zweimal getroffen hat.
Oh, bei den Giants weiß ich nicht, ob sie es wirklich besser wissen. Es fühlt sich schon wie eine Notlösung an, weil wir können auch gleich nochmal fragen, was bedeutet das für Aaron Rodgers. Aber ich kann es auch nicht hundertprozentig bewerten, weil ich erst abwarten will, was sie im Draft machen. Holen sich trotzdem noch einen jungen Quarterback. Und dann kann ich fühlen, was die Giants vorhaben. Bis jetzt weiß ich es noch nicht, ehrlich gesagt. Dann ist
aber
nämlich so ein Bridge hier ein Übergangsjahr.
Werden sie nicht spielen lassen, meinst du? Oder sie lassen
naja, das kann ja trotzdem sein, dass sie ihn spielen lassen, aber wenn du einen, gut, wenn Sanders kommt, will der auch gleich spielen, wobei ja, eben, mit 10,5 Millionen garantiert, ja. Also deswegen, da sind viele offene Fragen, die, glaube ich, dann für mich erst nach dem Draft geklärt sind. Ich glaube auch, dass es eine Notlösung ist, definitiv, weiß auch nicht, ob er da reinpasst. Ich finde es aber tatsächlich noch spannender, was macht jetzt Aaron Rodgers? Der hat eigentlich zwei Optionen. Steelers oder aufhören?
Ja, stimmt eigentlich, ja.
Also ich sehe sonst keine Browns. Chance mehr für Aaron Rodgers. Ja, okay. Ja, aber...
Aber das macht er nicht. Ja, das wird sehr interessant werden, ob der und wie der überhaupt irgendwo reinpasst. Also das wird Wird spannend. Stand jetzt, Mittwochabend zeichnen wir auf, gibt es da noch keine News dazu. Vielleicht dauert es sogar noch bis zum Draft oder so. Mal schauen, wann Aaron Rodgers irgendwo unterschreibt oder irgendwas verkündet vor allen Dingen.
Vielleicht hat er in seiner Höhle auch kein Faxgerät, um den Vertrag zu unterschreiben. Aber das soll nicht unser Problem sein. Gehen wir weiter, weil kam dann Dienstag, ein paar Minuten später, eigentlich die nächste große Nachricht. Die New England Patriots haben, wir haben letzte Woche ja drüber gesprochen, einen neuen Wide Receiver. Stephon Diggs, 3 Jahre, 69 Millionen, 26 davon sind garantiert. Im ersten Moment dachte ich, wow, das ist viel Kohle. Im Schnitt 23 Millionen, da ist er insgesamt Platz 16 unter den Wide Receivern, genauso viel wie in Calvin Ridley beispielsweise. Aber im ersten Moment dachte ich, wow, verdammt viel Kohle.
Das war auch mein erster Gedanke, gerade in Bezug auf irgendwie bei den Bills ja zu einer Zeit nicht so schön gegangen worden am Ende des Tages. Bei den Texans natürlich sportlich schon auch ein Upgrade gegeben, aber viel verletzt. Und auch da rumorte es so ein Stück weit, auch in seiner verletzten Zeit. Zumindest hat man das mal so zwischen den Zeilen immer gehört. Und jetzt kommt er zu den Patriots, die natürlich A, viel Geld haben. Das werden die Agents natürlich auch wissen. B, Stephon Diggs, wenn er fit ist, ist das ein richtig geiler Receiver. Brauchen wir nicht drüber reden. Ist der Nummer 1 Receiver bei den Patriots, der er sein kann. Wir haben letzte Woche drüber gesprochen. Könnt ihr gerne nochmal nachhören. Auch mit einem Beatwriter übrigens.
Genau, auch mit Chris Price vom Boston Globe. Da könnt ihr definitiv nochmal reinhören. Wenn ihr euch denkt, dass Diggs jetzt dazugekommen ist, ist es immer noch aktuell.
Ja, genau. Stimmt. Und deswegen habe ich da auch, ähnlich wie bei Russell Wilson, so ein bisschen Bauchschmerzen, die du ja vor allen Dingen in Bezug auf Diggs immer hast, Stichwort Umkleidekabine, aber ich vor allen Dingen aus medizinischer Sicht, ob er von Woche 1, / Training Camp, / Preseason, direkt dieser Nummer 1 Typ sein kann. Also da bin ich sehr gespannt.
Also ich gehe mal davon aus, dass die Patriots ihre Hausaufgaben gemacht haben, dass er fit sein wird, und dann ist er natürlich für dieses Receiving Core ein phänomenales Upgrade. Er kommt von einem Kreuzbandriss zurück, aber nochmal, ich glaube, die Patriots werden da nicht ganz blind reinlaufen und er klingt im ersten Moment teuer. Ich glaube, die genaue Struktur ist noch gar nicht raus von dem Vertrag, aber es klingt so, dass man vielleicht nach einem, vielleicht nach 2 Jahren da wieder einigermaßen gut ungeschoren rauskommen könnte. Dann ist es für mich, glaube ich, völlig fein. Zum Vergleich, letztes Jahr bei Houston, ich habe extra nochmal nachgeschaut, hat er 22,5 Millionen pro Jahr verdient. Ja, also hat sogar nochmal mehr bekommen, trotz Kreuzbandriss. Okay, eine halbe Million.
So schnell kann es gehen. Aber ja, ich bin gespannt, wie er sich eingliedern wird und wie das funktioniert. Dass das für den Quarterback vor allen Dingen eine geile Anspielstation ist, da glaube ich, brauchen wir nicht drüber reden.
Deswegen, ja, und hat es gebraucht.
Unbedingt.
Rein vom Talente-Level, wenn er fit ist, ist er wahrscheinlich mit der Beste, der noch bei den Free Agents verfügbar war.
Ja, das auf jeden Fall. Genau.
Machen wir weiter?
Ja, die Ravens holen den Cornerback Chidobe Awuzie, der von den Titans vorher entlassen worden ist. Awuzie für mich immer so ein, ich sage mal Pendler, eigentlich ein Starter, einer, der auch richtig Potenzial hat, aber oftmals auch irgendwie den Erwartungen dahinter geblieben ist. Das ist zumindest mein persönliches Empfinden. Der hat aber, finde ich, immer noch gerade das Potenzial auch bei den Ravens. Und da wissen wir, dass die ja auch da vor allen Dingen in der Passing-Verteidigung etwas brauchen oder immer noch brauchten. Sie holen ihn mit dazu. Mal schauen, wie weit sie ihn dann da einbinden oder welche Rolle er dann genau spielen wird. Das wird sich natürlich erst in den nächsten Monaten dann zeigen. Aber finde ich eine spannende Ergänzung bei Baltimore.
Ich finde es so einen typischen, cleveren Ravens-Move, wenn ich ehrlich bin. Da war eine Lücke da nach der Entlassung von Marcus Williams. Das war ein Need. Ich könnte mir aber trotzdem vorstellen, dass im Draft da auch noch was machen. Mit der Awuzie hast du jetzt aber einen Spieler, der 8 Jahre NFL-Erfahrung hat, was auf jeden Fall schon mal von Vorteil ist. Und der hatte auch wirklich gute Phasen. Der unterschreibt dann für ein Minimum, Veterans Minimum. Also wird jetzt auch nicht sonderlich teuer sein. Und ist ja ganz spannend. Letztes Jahr, also vor der letzten Saison, hat er noch bei den Titans für 3 Jahre 36 Millionen unterschrieben. Das haben sie auch nicht gemacht, weil sie einfach Geld rausballern wollen, sondern weil sie auch eine gewisse Qualität gesehen haben. Also ich glaube, für die Ravens mal eine ganz gute Absicherung. Tennessee zahlt ihm noch 7,5 Millionen. Also das Geld kommt vor allem von den Titans und nicht von den Ravens. Ich glaube, mein Gefühl war gleich, macht Sinn. Sehe ich, dass das passen könnte.
Genau, weil der kann nämlich richtig in die erste Reihe reinspringen wieder mit dem Talent, was er hat. Und wenn nicht, dann ist auch okay.
Und du musst eben nicht die Nummer 1 sein.
Korrekt.
Auf Cornerback. Das hilft.
Ganz genau. Dann haben die Patriots, über die wir gerade eben schon kurz gesprochen haben, ein Angebot gematcht. Das gibt ja, ich weiß gar nicht, wie der Fachbegriff wieder ist, ich habe schon wieder vergessen. Die Raiders haben für Christian Ellis, den Linebacker, ein Angebot hinterlegt. Ich glaube, so kann man es am
vernünftigsten erklären. Offersheet quasi gematcht.
Offersheet, ja, genau. Hinterlegt. Und dann hatten die Patriots bis Montag Zeit, also vor ein paar Tagen, das zu matchen. Das ist, glaube ich, das falsche Wort, aber ihr wisst, was ich meine.
Das ist aber, glaube ich, das einzige Wort, was er passt tatsächlich.
Ja, das stimmt.
Und das dasselbe haben jetzt, Angebot
genau,
zu machen.
Ja, genau. Mindestens dasselbe, glaube ich, muss es so sagen.
Ja, genau.
Und das haben sie getan. Ja, das ist die News. Genau, zwei Jahre, 13,5 Mille.
Da hast du schon gesagt, wunderbar. Ja. Weil das ist ja dieses, er ist ein Restricted Free Agent, heißt, er darf verhandeln, aber das Team hat quasi immer noch mal das Recht nachzuziehen. Unrestricted Free Agent, der kann machen, was er will.
Ja.
Der könnte jetzt dann unterschreiben, genau, und dann könnten die Patriots machen, was sie wollen. Der hatte letztes Jahr, glaube ich, kann man schon sagen, sein Durchbruch bei den Patriots. Da hat er knapp 1 Million verdient. Dementsprechend Dank an die Raiders aus seiner Sicht, dass sie das Angebot hochgetrieben haben, vermutlich.
Ja.
Und die Patriots ihn aber dann behalten haben. Ja, glaube ich, dann auch irgendwo nachvollziehbar.
Siehst du auch, das geht in der NFL offiziell. Im Fußball würde irgendein Berater irgendein Gerücht streuen. Die Raiders sind an dem interessiert, verlängert den mal lieber. Hier läuft es offiziell. Wir
brauchen mehr Offersheets im europäischen Sport.
Genau, so sieht's aus. Dann haben wir aus der letzten Woche noch ein bisschen was aufzulösen, was wir ja schon angesprochen haben. Gerne nochmal der Hinweis, hört da gerne rein.
Kurz nach der Aufnahme, deswegen schauen wir die ganze Zeit schon bei Social Media rein, was aktuell gerade passiert.
Ja, sehr gut, sehr gut. Und zwar geht's um Deebo Samuel. Wir sprechen ja heute auch über die Commanders, aber da wollen wir euch vorab schon mal mitgeben, der Vertrag, der ist jetzt dann auch getätigt, beziehungsweise, ja, unterschrieben worden oder umstrukturiert worden, nennt es wie ihr wollt. 17 Millionen bekommt er jetzt für dieses Jahr garantiert. Plus 3 Millionen für die kommende Saison als Bonus, die er sehr wahrscheinlich einstreichen wird. Also fürs erste Jahr knappe 20 Mille, die er bekommt. Und genau, das ist wichtig, weil man sonst ja, also man muss ja den Vertrag irgendwann bei der Liga auch dementsprechend einreichen. So.
Ja, und die Texans, das war ein bisschen ärgerlich, kurz nach unserer Aufnahme, weil wir über Cam Robinson ja gesprochen haben, den Left Tackle, weil der zum Beispiel eine Option hätte sein können für die Patriots, war scheinbar nicht.
Ja.
Der geht auf jeden Fall zu den Texans als Ersatz für Laremy Tunsil. Tunsil ist dann gleich nachher auch nochmal Thema bei den Washington Commanders. Also Robinson kommt von Minnesota für ein Jahr und sie haben auch noch Trent Brown, den Tackle, geholt. Von New England ein Jahr bis zu 3 Millionen möglich. Also die Texans mit Tunsil einen besseren verloren, aber jetzt zumindest mal ein bisschen nachgelegt auf der Left-Tackle-Position, vor allem, um da eben auch eine gewisse Qualität zu haben.
Ja, eine Qualität, eine Auswahl und auch zwei, die brutales Talent haben, es nicht immer gezeigt haben, also auch dafür nicht, ähnlich wie wir bei Owusie gerade schon gesprochen haben. Dann haben wir noch Verlängerungen zu vermelden, auch bei den Texans, die mit Danielle Hunter verlängert haben, um ein Jahr 35,6 Millionen. Ist jetzt damit am zweithöchst bezahlteste Defensive End der Liga, kriegt dann diese Saison 32 Millionen und dann 55,1 über die nächsten 2 Jahre. Also der wäre jetzt nicht ausgelaufen, der war kein Free Agent, aber sie haben vorzeitig verlängert und ihm dementsprechend auch mehr Gehalt gegeben.
Genau, diese 35,6 Millionen, die gelten dann 2026 und in dem Jahr ist er der zweitbestbezahlteste Defensive End, weil Miles Garrett hat ja im Schnitt die 14 Millionen. Und wo ist Crosby? War bei 35 oder 35,5?
35,5,
glaube ich. Ja. Und Danielle Hunter ist da bei 35,6. Also da ist er ganz knapp davor und ist der zweitbestbezahlte Defensive End. Nicht ganz so viel Kohle, aber immer noch, glaube ich, ausreichend bekommt Charles Omenihu von den Chiefs. Der hat nämlich auch verlängert ein Jahr und da sind bis zu 7 Millionen möglich. Oh. So wenig Geld, der Arme.
Oh, der arme Defensive End. Der ist der am zweitschlechtest bezahlteste in der Defensive End. Nee, 7 Millionen für ein Jahr ist immer noch, glaube ich, ganz schick.
Ich würde es nehmen.
Genau. Die Saints holen Brandon Cooks. Das fand ich eine Meldung, die ist sehr interessant. 2 Jahre, 13 Millionen. Der Wide Receiver, der bei den Saints jetzt da auftribbelt. Ich wundere mich nach wie vor, wie die das immer alles machen mit der Kohle, weil Brandon Cooks ist auch kein schlechter. 13 Millionen ist nicht viel Geld, aber trotzdem sind es dann ein gewisser Capspace in dieser kommenden Saison, bei der wir uns ja kurz davor befinden. Brandon Cooks ist einer zum Beispiel bei den Cowboys auch, der kann verschiedene Rollen nehmen. Bin gespannt, wie er bei den Saints reinpasst. Da sind ja noch so ein paar Fragezeichen, haben wir ja auch schon drüber gesprochen in den vergangenen Wochen. Aber da ist ja auch einiges neu. Ich bin gespannt, wie Brandon Cooks da reinfinden wird.
Wurde damals von den Saints gedraftet, also geht zurück.
Stimmt, ja.
Zum Ausgangspunkt seiner NFL-Karriere. Was ist sonst noch passiert bei den Free Agents da? Wie gesagt, keine Gewähr auf Vollständigkeit. Nee, wir haben es noch nicht gesagt, ich sag's jetzt. Keine Gewähr auf Vollständigkeit, weil doch immer relativ viel passiert. Wenn wir alle aufzählen, dauert es 48 Stunden. Was ich mir noch aufgeschrieben habe, die Chargers haben sich Tyler Conklin geholt von den Jets. Mhm. Ein Jahr 3 Millionen, da sind bis zu 4,5 Millionen möglich. Und die Browns, die wahrscheinlich gerade so ein bisschen puzzeln und ihren Kader zusammenstellen. Tavon Jenkins von den Bears geholt, der war jetzt lange ohne Club dann. Ja. Der O-Liner, der ja eigentlich alles spielen kann, wurde damals von den Bears als Tackle gedraftet. Im Rookie-Jahr hatte der aber dann eine Rücken-OP, hat dann Right Guard gespielt. Jetzt letztes Jahr war dann komplett Left Guard. Ja, also der kann eigentlich relativ viel spielen. kommt den Browns vielleicht zu Pass, dass er überall eingesetzt werden kann. Ein gewisses Talent hat er ja. Tavon Jenkins, auch wenn er es nicht bis, ja, Ultimo ausnutzen bzw. aufzeigen konnte.
Wer auch immer Quarterback spielen wird im neuen Jahr bei den Browns, wird sich über Tavon Jenkins bestimmt.
Aaron Rodgers, der Weg ist gepflastert.
Ein Stück freuen, die auch Jerome Baker übrigens von den Tennessee Titans geholt haben. Aber Jenkins, ehemalig Bears, das ist der perfekte Übergang für unseren nächsten Part, denn jetzt wollen wir über die Geheimfavoriten, wie Christoph so schon gesagt hat, sprechen. Und wir wollen mit den Chicago Bears beginnen, mit Alan Goldshear. Dem wir Goldshear, ist richtig, Goldshear.
Alan Goldshear, ja.
So, Goldshear,
der Alan, für die Bears on SI, also wirklich ein Bears-Speedwriter ist, berichtet. Ja. Man findet ihn auch unter chicagosportstuff.substack.com. Also auch da könnt ihr ihn
relativ einfach zu merken.
Begleiten, ja, genau. aber ja, da geht es ein bisschen drum um die Bears, die ja schon eigentlich letztes Jahr eine heiße Mannschaft haben, aber ich diesem Jahr wirklich, wirklich spannend sind.
Ja.
Yes, we're happy that Alan is joining us. Alan, I think it's a good time to write, to report about the Bears. Is there hope in Chicago now? More hope?
is there hope? No. But is there hope for hope? Yes.
Perfect.
They did some amazing work this offseason. Backtracking lesson, before we came on the air, I was kind of alluding to this. Last year, when Caleb Williams was drafted with the first pick, it was said that he was coming into the best situation that any rookie quarterback, especially a first pick rookie quarterback in NFL history, has come into. You know, he had DJ Moore. He had a really cool rookie receiver in Rome Odunze. They had signed Keenan Allen, a very reliable veteran. They picked up DeAndre Swift, who they believed was going to be a legit RB1. I never believed that for what it's worth. And they had a defense that in 2023 had finished the season, the last eight games of the season, with a legit elite status, right? They were playing great. So here's Caleb coming in. He's got a great trio of receivers. He's got a fine defense. He's got theoretically a good new offensive play caller in Shane Waldron, who turned out to be a major bust. And unfortunately, it didn't work out. They had that 10-game losing streak. They just played near the end of the year. It was just a disaster. You know, the Matt Eberflus situation, the former head coach, now former head coach, thank goodness, of the Bears. His coaching staff just did not give Caleb a chance to succeed. Here we are, coming into 2025. They hired arguably the most lusted after coaching candidate in Ben Johnson. Understandable why, because, you know, the Bears got to watch him, I think, six times do crazy offensive stuff to them. So, you know, it was understandable. The Lions, you know, were the best team, arguably the best team in the best regular season team, certainly in the NFC last year. So if you can poach not just Johnson, but a couple of his assistant coaches, then you're setting Caleb up for success.
Yeah, because
that's interesting.
That's a pretty good point, because last year I was thinking about, like, oh, the Bears had a really nice free agency. So, and now you're covering the Bears on SI. And how often did you write the name Ben Johnson? Because everything is everything is aligned to this Ben Johnson situation, and he also has an exact plan. This is like the feeling I've got from this free agency. Of course, we're talking about names later on. But what's the situation with Ben Johnson? It seems like everything is new, but he has the exact plan and everything leads to him and also his coaching stuff.
All right, well, I'll take your first part of the question, Flo, in that how many times did I write the name Ben Johnson? Leading up to the hire, every day, literally every day, I would probably write 2 to 3 articles, whether they were what happens if the Bears hire Ben Johnson, what happens if the Bears don't hire Ben Johnson, who were Ben Johnson's most interesting potential assistant coach. It was just like on and on and on. So when it finally happened, and there was always the feeling in Chicago, right? There's always the feeling that bad things are going to happen, because bad things always do happen in Chicago. So when they did hire him, you know, obviously the Bears on SI crew was very excited, because we could write about like legit news instead of speculation about the coach. And, you know, bringing him in, his introductory press conference was wonderful, right? He came in, he had that family vibe. He talked about his wife. Mm-hmm. He talked about his children. And he also talked about the one thing he said, the first thing he said when he walked into the interview with team president Kevin Warren and GM Ryan Poles, he said, "I want this job." right? And if you say that, you want this job. And I myself have actually used that on occasion since then, because it worked for him. Why not work for me, right?
Yeah.
And what he brings to the table is, for lack of a better word, professionality, right? I always sense that Matt Eberflus and his team, they weren't amateurs per se, but they didn't really seem like an A-level, world-class coaching staff. Ben, right now, even before he's coached a single game, a single snap, looks like he's the real deal, right? And he put together this all-star cast of he got Antoine Randall as the assistant offensive player, assistant offensive coach. You've got Dennis Allen coming off of a nice little stretch in New Orleans as their defensive coordinator. You've got legit guys who are going to, and I think this is the most important point that people need to latch on to. This coaching staff is going to play to the players' strengths rather than trying to jam their skill set into a previously planned out scheme, right? So Caleb can throw the long ball, right? He's got really good accuracy downfield. Eberflus or Shane Waldron never let him really do that. They never sent DJ Moore. They never sent Roma Dunze down the field on a regular basis. They never let Caleb open it up. Johnson, you know, based on what we saw with Jared Goff and Amon-Ra St. Brown last year, obviously has that in his DNA. And I'm really looking forward to see how he does indeed unleash Caleb Williams.
So there is hope, positive aspects. Are the circumstances now for Caleb Williams the circumstances he should have had last year? An offensive-minded head coach? I want to rate if it's better to have a defensive-minded head coach or offensive-minded head coach, but it feels like already last year it would probably help him more if this franchise would move forward going offensive-minded on the head coach position.
Yeah, and they also put a lot of money into the trenches during free agency. They basically retooled the entire offensive line.
Mm-hmm. Will help probably.
Oh, my God, poor Caleb. Do you remember how many times he got sacked last year?
I wrote the number down. What was it? 68. The third most ever in the NFL, I think.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
Crazy. Ridiculous. It was like it was a nonstop avert your eyes situation as you're watching. Oh, here it goes again. Oh, here it goes again. And, you know, was it all the offensive line's fault? No. Caleb has to bear some responsibility. He has a tendency to, and this used to drive me nuts, when he was avoiding the rush, rather than like sprint left, sprint right, he would kind of just drift backwards, right? Mm-hmm. There wasn't any cutting. It was just straight backwards, and his legs weren't really doing anything special. So, you know, a defender can just come right at him straight ahead, easily come at him from the side. I'm hoping that this year, the combination of some really good veteran offensive linemen, you know, you got the former All-Pro Joe Tooney coming over from Kansas City. That's a guy who knows how to block. He knows how to keep his quarterback clean. Like, look how few times, I don't know how many times Patrick Mahomes got sacked last year because I don't write for Chiefs on that side, but it ain't 68, right? So you've got him. You signed Jonah Jackson, who played really nicely in his 1 year in Detroit under Ben Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Darnell Wright with another year under his belt. He had a wonderful year last year. And I think Caleb is going to be a little bit safer. My only question right now, and I'd love to find out y'all's take on this, is the running situation, right? So DeAndre Swift had a really disappointing year last year. He barely cracked 1,000 yards in total yardage. He made very few splash plays. He wasn't a good security blanket, right? And a rookie quarterback needed a good security blanket. So right now, you know, there aren't any useful free agent running backs left. The draft is very running back heavy. Mm-hmm. I'm going to throw a question to you guys. Do you guys think the Bears should go running back in round one?
Yeah, that's a good point. We had that already, I think, from 2 weeks ago. I mean, the running back class looks pretty nice. And as you mentioned, I mean, what I can understand is your concerns are also maybe with the offensive line and run blocking, because the pass protection should be really good. If this answer is one running back rookie who is pretty nice, I don't know, but I would say yes, at least in the first two rounds, I guess. I don't know what Christoph is saying, but I think
That summarizes. I mean, it is a good running back class, so therefore it would make sense. I mean, they have the number 10 pick. Maybe that's too high for a running back. On the other side, if there is Chanty going on 10, maybe you pick him. I don't know where the holes is. On the other side, Ben Johnson or the Lions had been very aggressive or picked always the guys they need and not the maybe best available, or you can say best available, but they had the needs and they go for the needs. So is he bringing this kind of DNA with the Bears? I think that the Bears draft will be very interesting because running back is a position you have to upgrade, I guess.
But Alan, do you think that they would trade down also, maybe to get a running back? You do?
100%. Yeah, okay. I've done about 3 million mock drafts over the last 4 weeks, and probably half of them are just to get people open discussion, right? Some of them are pretty crazy. In the more straight ahead ones, I have the Bears standing pat at 10 spot, taking a trench guy, taking the best trench player available, right?
It would make sense.
It would make sense. But having said that, if they traded up to get Geinty, to get Ashton Geinty, the video game from Boise State, I would have no problem with that because they do have 2 second round picks, right? Mm-hmm. So if they traded up to, they're going to have to leapfrog the Las Vegas Raiders at 6, who very much want Geinty. They need him. They need a running back badly. They'd have to make a deal with probably Jacksonville at the 5 spot. So, you know, send Jacksonville the 10th pick and maybe their second round pick and move up to 5, grab Geinty. Or conversely, you'll have to get a little funky if you trade down because there aren't any obvious deals that you can put together. Buffalo is the only team in the league that has 2 second round draft picks, right? So you could almost say, okay, I'm going to drop down. I think the Bills pick at 30. I'm going to send the Bills the 10, take 30, and then 2 of their second round picks. So then all of a sudden you've got like 8 of the first 70 some odd picks, which is really exciting. Mm-hmm. You can grab a good running back with that kind of draft capital.
Yeah, they should come out of the running back from this draft because in free agency, they filled the let's say biggest holes, offensive line. We didn't talk about the center, Drew Dolman, a very expensive one, but I think a very, very helpful one. Everybody who needed a center wanted to have him.
Yeah.
You had a second pass rusher mid Deye Odeyingbo, which was a big need from my side, which I wanted to have them now. Of course, it's a little bit of a gamble because it's not the high class edge, but I think there is development for him.
Yeah, solid.
And you had a third wide receiver with Zaccheaus, Olamide Zaccheaus. So these are 3 holes. I mean, maybe there are some little holes still, but they did a good job. And now in the draft, you can really go, Christoph.
Yeah, really well put. They are small holes. I wouldn't mind them taking a wide receiver on day 2. I wouldn't mind them taking a tight end with the 10th pick. I would not mind seeing Tyler Warren from Penn State, who is head and shoulders the best tight end in the class. And is he Brock Bowers? No. Is he Zach Ertz? Maybe. I could use a Zach Ertz. Caleb Williams could use a Zach Ertz, right? So if you get a really reliable tight end, which Cole Kmet, the current incumbent starter, is not, that all of a sudden is going to open up things. So, you know, you walk away with a Tyler Warren. You walk away with a Caleb Johnson from in the second or third round. And all of a sudden, you've got some weapons that Ben Johnson is used to, right? Like he had a Sam Laporta, and he had the two-headed running back monster of David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs in Detroit. He did pretty well with that. So if the Bears can get like a solid RB 1.5, if you will, and a legit tight end 1, and maybe even another reliable pass catcher. And they've got this kid named Tyler Scott on the roster who is apparently a speedster, but he hasn't seen the field, right? Maybe he's got some game. So I think they need another downfield threat. Zaccheaus is not that guy, but he's kind of that guy. There's a lot of pieces that I think Ben Johnson would have a great time with, devising weirdo trick plays and having a lot of fun.
What is your opinion about the defense? Christoph mentioned Odeyingbo, and they also had Grady Jarrett, not the youngest anymore, $16 million per year, I guess. Do you think they could also go like for some depth on the defensive line or in defense, especially in the maybe first 2 or 3 rounds in the draft, so that the running back position is not the only one they have to worry about?
That's a great question. Mason Graham could fall down to 10. right? Mm-hmm, he's a Michigan D lineman. He's a beast. Some people have him ranked as one of the top five players in the whole draft, not just one of the top five defenders, not just one of the top five linemen, one of the top five players. If he falls to 10, great. If they can find some logical deal to trade up and get Abdul Carter, I'd love that. That would be fantastic.
That would be very fantastic.
Oh, my God. But if they rolled into the season right now with this defense and maybe like a couple day two or even day three rotational additions and maybe snuck in a good signing and, oh, who knows, maybe traded for Trey Hendrickson, all of a sudden, this is a really scary-looking, relatively well-balanced team.
Is there a rumor regarding Trey Hendrickson? Sorry, Christoph. Or is it just
wish rumor created by me? There, when he went on the block, when he had said he wanted out, there were whispers. Yeah. Vegas had him as, I think, the fourth most likely landing spot for Hendrickson. Mm-hmm. Do I think the Bengals are going to trade him? Maybe. They just paid Chase and Higgins a whole lot of money. They're not going to be able to afford him much longer. Yeah. And if I'm the Bears, do I want to, like, I won't give up my first, but I give up both of my seconds for him. And I think Cincinnati might go for that. Mm-hmm.
So we had been very positive because I think the defense is not so much under construction. There had been a very solid performances the last years. I like to have a second edge defender. I think that was the biggest hole they stuffed for sure. Everything can become better. That's normal in sports. But now with we started it with the word hope. I had that hope last year already, to be honest. Is there a chance to fall in a season like last year, or is it not really possible because the circumstances are much better? Because on the other hand, we didn't know what Ben Johnson is as a head coach.
Yeah,
he was a perfect offensive coordinator, but we didn't have to see it as a head coach so far.
Yeah, I mean, we brought in Matt Nagy a couple of years ago, and he had an amazing first year. But then I don't want to say true colors, but that sounds kind of harsh. But true colors started showing, and he turned out not to be a very good head coach. Kansas City liked him enough to bring him back as their QB coach. Is Ben Johnson going to be Matt Nagy? No, I don't think so. He's definitely got a little more grr to him, right? And, you know, you guys are all about Amon-Ra St. Brown. You saw his reactions when Johnson left. He was not happy.
No, he wasn't.
And I don't know if you guys watched the Netflix receiver special, but Amon-Ra is a football intellectual, right? He gets the game. And if he is saying, we're going to miss Ben Johnson like crazy, and he's talking about how good the Bears are going to be with Johnson and some of the pieces they've added, that's a great sign. But nonetheless, he's a rookie head coach. He's going to have growing pains. Caleb is only going to be a second year. He's a sophomore. He's going to have more growing pains. The offensive line, while they do have some more pieces, going to have to meld. That's probably not going to happen until week 6 or 7. The defense is still a bunch of question marks. Something I wanted to bring up. I'm really concerned about Jaquan Brisker because last year he had a couple concussions and there's like no news coming out of Hal's Hall about him. He tweets once in a while. He's pretty, active social media guy. And he claims sort of that he's healthy. If he is not going to be healthy, the Bears will have to address the position on draft day, probably day two.
Safety position for all our listeners or viewers. Yep, the safety position. Yep,
have to address the safety position. Which wouldn't be a horrible thing anyhow. A little safety death never hurt anybody. They probably will grab someone on day three, almost no matter what. But if they grab someone, even like trade down and get a safety on day one or early in day two, you know that Brisker is kind of in trouble. And he'd be a pretty big loss. So, if you're going to prognosticate what the defense is up to, you have to take that into account. Another under the radar move that I was not happy with was they cut Jack Sanborn, who was a pretty rabid outside linebacker, right? And they've got Edmonds and Edwards, a really nice duo at linebacker, but they are going to need another body. And that's also going to have to be addressed in the draft. And until we find out what happens in the backfield, if Brisker's healthy, and how they fix the hole at linebacker, I don't think you can really make a, intelligent prognostication about what the defense is going to look like. That said, I am mad that Dennis Allen is going to be calling the defensive plays instead of Eberflus.
Yeah, but there's good points to know for the upcoming weeks. Yeah, that's especially with Briska. That's something you have to watch for sure.
100%.
Yeah, definitely. So there are a few holes and, of course, a few things to be done in Chicago. Maybe the last question is, because Ben Johnson, rookie head coach, we talked about it. Do you think Chicago is a tough sports city? The fans and also maybe the franchise will give him a little bit of time if maybe you have not the best first 4 weeks or something? No? I mean, you're one of these guys. So
okay, so here's the thing. The Bears have not made a splash head coach hire since Mike Ditka, really. Lovie Smith was a slick little hire. But, you know, they bring in John Fox. Ooh, he's a veteran. Great. They bring in Mark Trestman trying to be, you know, outside the box thinker. This, like, guy from Canada who has no NFL experience, and it showed. Nagy, not great. Eberflus, not great. This is the first time that I can remember since the 80s that a fan base has been really excited about a head coach. Mm-hmm. I think they are going to give him a little bit more leeway, that being the case. And I think that the viewers are going to be like, okay, he's new. Caleb's new. Let's not boo him off the field in week 7, you know?
Okay, of course.
Yeah, Chicago is a top tough spot sports-wise. Yeah. So for sure, very electric fans, but of course they want to have success after a lot of years with not so much success. Alan, thank you very much. Very interesting insights, because I think the Bears will be a very interesting team, especially in this NFC North with so many strong teams.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I mean, I'm not supposed to cheer in the press box, but I would love to see a good year out of my guys.
And for all of you guys out there, for our viewers and listeners, you can also enjoy Alan's Chicago sports stuff, so to say. So if you want to read many more, you can do that. Alan, maybe you can say it once again for our viewers.
Yeah, chicagosportsstuff.substack.com. Subscription is a freebie for now. It is going to cost at some point in the very near future. And check out Bears on SI. We drop anywhere from like 3 to 20 articles a day. Depending on what's going on in the news. Sometimes we just want to spout stuff off, but there's always new content coming out. And we have a really good team. I think we do a pretty good job. So if you like me blah, blah, blahing here, you'll probably enjoy the blah, blah, blahing online.
You did. That's how we found you. So appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Christoph. Appreciate you guys.
Ja, da war jetzt schon der ein oder andere Name auch aus dem Draft 2025 mit dabei. Der Hinweis schon mal für euch, wenn euch denkt, wer war das alles für Namen? Soweit bin ich doch gar nicht. Wir starten ab nächster Woche dann rein mit unseren Draft, Vorschauen, Plural, und schauen da eben auf die vermeintlich oder potenziell besten Prospects. Also wenn euch die Namen noch nichts gesagt haben, nächste Woche starten wir mal rein. Plan ist mal, die Skill Positions nächste Woche uns anzuschauen. Mhm. Auch jetzt dann bei den nächsten beiden Segmenten könnte der ein oder andere Name fallen.
Oder auch immer der gleiche.
Starten wir erstmal mit den Washington Commanders, und das machen wir mit John Keim, der arbeitet für ESPN und hat, glaube ich, im Moment eine spannende Zeit vor der Nase mit einem sehr aufstrebenden Team aus der Hauptstadt.
All right, so John Keim from ESPN with us now from the Washington Commanders. Offseason so far, the free agency so far, there was a lot of things going on. There were a lot of things last year, but now you got a little bit of pressure, of course, as you are a playoff team. What is your first impression? We are coming to names. We are doing everything in the free agency, but what was your first impression maybe the last week ago with all this happening in Washington?
How often did you say, oh, wow?
Yeah, I think the impression. Well, there's a couple of things, and I was talking about this with someone yesterday, that it's so weird to have an off season where it doesn't include who's going to be the quarterback. So, like, you take that one off the list, and that's, I've covered this team a long time. That's the first time you can. Well, it's one of the few times you could actually say that and actually believe that you're going to have to scratch it. You can scratch it off the list for a while, but I think what really stood out clearly is some of the trades they made, right? Getting Deebo Samuel from the San Francisco 49ers for a fifth round draft pick to enhance the talent at receiver to help Jaden Daniels. Then the second, the huge one was then getting, of course, left tackle Laremy Tunsil in a trade with the Houston Texans to help protect Jaden Daniels better. So they're doing what they can to enhance what is around him, which I think you need to do. And it's funny because the previous coach, Ron Rivera, would always talk about, well, you get a quarterback, you've got to protect him, you got to give him talent. Well, this group is doing that. And by getting Tunsil, it allows him to move Brandon Coleman, who started at left tackle last year, to a spot that where he can probably be more, way more effective, whether it's right tackle or guard. So I think what you did with that one move was actually improve probably two positions and give you a core offensive line group they haven't had for like the next 4 or 5 years potentially. So like that's what jumped out. And then the other thing that jumped out was when you look at their defensive line, now they did not add a dynamic player, but they raised the floor of the talent they had. So they, from like 1 through 8, there's not a huge drop off, which you can say like that means you don't have that elite guy, but it also means that the floor has been raised. So when you're rotating these guys, it should maintain a more consistent level of play, especially against the run where they were really weak last year.
Well, you mentioned so many important names. Of course, from a German perspective, Brandon Coleman is a very interesting, interesting one. I think he had a solid first season. Yes. You mentioned it. He will get a new position with Laremy Tunsil for sure. What's your feeling? Which position will fit the best? My first impression was, oh, he's playing left guard. But for sure, right tackle would also make sense.
So what I heard initially was right tackle. Now, that's okay. Not coming from somebody inside the team. It was just the first thing, because I have the same thought as you. I think he'd be a terrific guard. I think when, you know, it's funny because when he came to the NFL, there were definitely people that you talked to, whether it's line coaches or others, who felt like he'd be more effective as guard, could play tackle. Now, part of that is, you know, when you he has, as you know, like arm length is a big deal for left tackles, for any tackle, right? And his arm length is right in line with what a lot of tackles are, but he's shorter than most tackles. So when you look at him, when you're up near him, he's got the dimensions of a really, really good guard potentially. However, like I think you could also make a case at right tackle, and I think that's where he ends up, but not 100% sure that with his athleticism, it would really give them another guy who can do some things on the move. So, you know, you pair him next to Sam Cosmi, who's their right guard, and you could have a very athletic right side of the line. So now you could also make the case that if you put him at left guard, you have a athletic left side of the line. But I think you would then have your bookend tackles and take that off. Now, Andrew Wiley has been starting there the last couple of years. He wasn't horrible last year, but he's also older. He's in the last year of his deal. And I think you could then give you, if he becomes your backup tackle, you're in a good spot. But Coleman still has to go out and prove he can be an effective right tackle, right? But he does give you elements of that. And we saw, like you pointed out, is that he didn't, it wasn't like he struggled at left tackle. I just think they found someone that they wanted someone better, and they found that guy. But it wasn't like he was an embarrassment at tackle. He was, he did well at times, right? So that shows that he can play that position, but maybe the right side is better suited for him.
Because the Laremy Tunsil trade, wasn't it the big shocker from the Commander's perspective? I didn't saw that coming. I mean, that they could look for a left tackle, but to get Laremy Tunsil, Flo mentioned it was a bit, was it 2 weeks ago? Maybe a bit overpriced. For me, it was underpriced. Maybe the reality is in between. But to get Laremy Tunsil is such an upgrade. I mean, there's nothing against Brandon Coleman, but to get Tunsil is maybe such a game changer, probably.
It's a big upgrade. Like, you know, again, Coleman was fine. I don't know. I still think, like we talked, like his best spot is elsewhere other than left tackle. So you're getting a 5-time Pro Bowl tackle. Those guys are hard to find. The question is, why did Houston trade him? Because if he's that good and their line struggled, why are you trading him? But part of it was, there's a couple reasons that I think don't apply to Washington. One, they have a lot of contracts for young players that are coming due. And Tunsil now would be in line in another year or so to get an extension. So would Houston want to extend him when you have CJ Stroud, Will Anderson, other guys that are going to be up and coming in the next couple of years, that you're going to have to extend them. Mm-hmm. So I think that, and there were a number of them, that was part of it. Then the other part, what you hear is, well, he wasn't really a leader in that line group. Well, he doesn't have to be here because you have other guys in that group, their center, Tyler Biotis, Sam Cosmi. You don't need Laremy Tunsil to come in and be a leader for that group like maybe they would have needed in Houston if they didn't feel that. So I think it added up, but his play, and he also has a lot of penalties, but his play is very, very good. Like when you watch him, he is still one of the best. And I talked to a defensive coach who has faced Tunsil a few times. He's like, listen, when he's healthy, there's no one better in the league. So like that's still the reputation he has. So like you're right, like that was a seismic trade. And no, I did not see the trade coming. Mm-hmm. Like you said, you know, before a couple of days before free agency, you know, the thing that I heard, and it happened to be on the day Ronnie Stanley signed, was they want to go get, they'd like to go get Ronnie Stanley. Sure. And so all you're doing is spending money. Right. A lot of other people would have too, like whether or not they would have gotten them, who knows?
I would do the same.
Yeah. I think like add them to the list. Right. But, but the point was they were not content with what they had there. And they felt like they could improve their line by making this one move. And then really it's one move equals two, because Coleman is not, it's not like they're benching him. They just feel he's better elsewhere. So this really gave them one move to get two moves that can help them. So yeah, I was surprised by that, but it was, you know, it was a very good move by them.
And with all this being said, as you mentioned before, also Rivera said a few years ago, you have to protect your quarterback. Mm-hmm. We know Jaden Daniels can also be a big part in scrambling and all that stuff. What do you think about the offensive line? Because Cosmi coming back from injury, Tunsil had not this best season in Houston. They're shifting Wiley and Coleman. Maybe they try them in training camp or even switching positions like in preseason or everything like this. What do you, is your feeling with everybody in this offensive line to protect Jaden Daniels? Would you say it's then a good free agency so far, just for the reputation of these guys, or sports-wise, when they're trying to or switching positions, there is like an upgrade to go for?
Yeah, and I think that's a good question. I do think it's an upgrade, and I do think the line is better because Tunsil is just better than what they've had in since Trent Williams. So like there's an upgrade there. And I do, the question though, to your point, will Coleman, let's say they put him at right tackle and they bench Wiley, or Wiley becomes your swing tackle, or maybe Wiley can also play guard. And as you know, like Sam Cosmi is going to miss probably the first month of the season coming off that torn ACL from the playoffs. So you're going to need a right guard, whomever that is. And we don't know who that would be yet. So, but it gives you some flexibility with Wiley. But what we don't know is, well, is Coleman an upgrade at right tackle over Wiley? We don't know that yet, if that's where he ends up, you know, or if he is, how long does it take him to get to that point? Because Wiley's had a lot more experience, right? So, you know, that's the hard part. That's the part we don't know. So I think certainly over time, it's an upgrade because Wiley's older. He's been an okay right tackle, strength in the run game, not so great in the pass game. So, you know, there is, it's not like Coleman would be placing a Pro Bowler, but he is replacing he would be, if that's where he goes, replacing an experienced guy. We don't know what it's going to look like for him there because we haven't seen him there. So I don't, but I think overall, like Tyler Biotis, I think is a good center for them. You know, Nick Allegretti at left guard, I think he was all right at times. And at times, like, I think the contract they gave him last year suggested to myself and to others that it's like they viewed him as a potential starter, but a really good, if not a certainly not, they didn't pay him like a long-term starter. They paid him like a guy who, like, yeah, you can come in and start, probably will start, but in the future, you may be a backup. You know what I mean? He's going to be one of those guys where it's always like, can they replace him? Can they upgrade? And then he'll fight for a spot and he wins it or he doesn't. So, you know, but I think it's still with those four, Tunsil, Biotis, Cosmi, and Coleman, you have the makings of a group that could be the core for the next 4 years, assuming they extend Tunsil at some point. And they, again, that, so I think the potential is there to be a much stronger offensive line than what they've had. But, you know, we've all seen on paper, it looks one way, on the field.
Sure.
How did it work? And when does Coleman come through? When does Cosmi come back? How is he when he comes back? Those are questions we don't know yet, or answers we don't know yet.
And for sure, it's all about to get most of the rookie contract of Jayden Daniels. He got some new weapons. You mentioned already Deebo Samuel from the Niners. They lost Olamide Zaccheaus. I think he played a very good season. They signed Michael Gallup. He came back from retirement. What's your impression of this roster so far, offense-wise? I think the offensive line, we can make a plus. That looks on paper very good. Otherwise, running back game wasn't the best at the end of the season. I think there could be a potential upgrade maybe in the draft. Wide receiver looks solid. I mean, McLaurin had a great season. Zach Ertz re-signed, great season. Deebo Samuel, will he fit with the Commanders? What's your opinion about him?
So we'll break it down. The run game too. I'm glad you brought that up, because toward the end of the year, their run game with the running backs, because the run game includes
Daniel's game was fine with the
Now, so we put him in a different category, but you need have the running backs be more effective. So they're definitely looking at, in the draft, some of the top running backs, right? They met with them at the combine. You know, they're going to be, some of them would be coming here for their visit. So they clearly are interested in adding, and they've talked about that, another dynamic running back, right? Somebody, they would sometimes have to go on too many extended drives because you didn't have enough game changers, playmakers. So if you can get one of those guys in the draft, whether it's Travion Henderson, Quinshon Judkins, Omarion Hampton, guys like that who have some juice to their game, they definitely could use that, because they're – Brian Robinson was not as effective down the stretch. Wasn't all on him. I felt like the run blocking was not very good at times. I thought, like, for example, late in the year, they're playing at New Orleans. I thought the Saints defensive line bullied Washington's offensive line. Like, that was surprising how much they bullied them. So I think that that group has to prove they're better there, but then they would want to add another dynamic back. Then the best way to do it is in the draft. And it has good depth in the draft for that position. Then at receiver, they lost De'Ami Brown, and as you pointed out, Zaccheaus.
Exactly.
One of the things I would point out too, that when you look back at last year, how many of these receivers had their best year or were on pace to have their best year last year? Zaccheaus, De'Ami Brown, Terry McLaurin, Noah Brown. I mean, all those guys, what's the common denominator? It's the quarterback.
So
I think one thing they feel good about is getting guys who fit what they want. Noah Brown, I think, really fits, coming off the kidney injury. And he said he's been cleared to resume running and everything, so he should be fine. Is he a Pro Bowl number two? No, but he can help them, and they helped him last year. And I think Gallup will be interesting. I don't know what to expect. He's a good contested pass catcher down the field. We'll see, but I think, there's two keys. One, what does Deebo Samuel do? And I think one of the things he gives them is something that they could use, is a guy underneath who can break tackles and make guys miss and get a lot of stuff after the catch. He's not necessarily he's not a guy that you're going to throw like 30-yard passes down the field to all the time. More of his game, as I'm sure you know, is like in that 10 to 15-yard area where you break a tackle and now you're gone. And I think that they don't have that. So they need him to be that kind of guy. And he doesn't have to be the Deebo Samuel from 2021 when he had, 1,700 yards from scrimmage, but he's got to be an effective player for them. And their thought is he's on the last year of his contract. He's got a chance to have one more big payday in the NFL after this year. So what does he have to do? He's got to come in and they feel like they can get the best of Deebo Samuel from a motivational standpoint and from all those things, because he needs a good year, right? So I think he will help, but I do have questions still at receiver. Luke McCaffrey, to me, did not develop, I think, the way that I thought he might as a rookie. Now, it's never linear. Like, guys develop at different rates. He's still new to receiver, but I also felt like he would make more plays along the way, and you didn't really see enough of that as the season went on. Can he become more of that guy? Do they need another speed guy to get down the field opposite McLaurin? Like, is that the draft? Maybe. But I don't think they have that guy on their roster right now, right? Like, I think Noah Brown can make downfield plays because he's just a good deep, he tracks the ball well, makes contested catches. Same with Gallup. Can you get more of that? But I would want to add more speed outside just to provide another element for a guy who throws a deep ball very well. So that, to me, is still what's missing. And I think then the last thing would be tight ends. You brought up Zach Ertz. You know, the problem for Ertz is that he's now mid-30s. Can he duplicate what he did last year, right? Mm. And there's no reason to think he can't, but will he? And then the key there is, does Ben Sinnott develop? Because he's another one, like McCaffrey, you thought that, you know, you didn't see enough of him in that area. Will he take another year? Is it going to take a couple more years? I don't know, but he has to develop for, I think, this offense to develop beyond 2025.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it, what they will do. They are picking 29, maybe also running back, wide receiver position. Also, there are some good tight ends maybe for day 3 or 4 or anything like this. But also your opinion maybe to the defense. You got new guys like Javon Kinlaw, Jonathan Jones, the cornerback, Will Harris, the safety. You lost, of course, Jonathan Allen and Jeremy Jin, but you also extended Bobby Wagner. So I would say like there's a pillar during from the front until the secondary down. It looks pretty good as well. So it's also in free agency, the defensive needs maybe a little plus, or what's your opinion about the defense?
I think a little plus. I think, you know, again, everything in March is always how it looks on paper.
And, of course, yeah.
You know, there have been many times in the past where it looks like, wow, it looks great on paper. And then on the field, not quite the same. But the way it looks now to me, so they really, really, really emphasized fortifying that defensive line. And again, they didn't get dynamic players, but they got solid pros, right? So Dietrich Wise, a defensive end from New England, who's coming in here. So he can help them. I think Eddie Goldman, the nose tackle, I think can help them stop the run. Gives them something they didn't have, which was a big body inside. Like Jonathan Allen was playing at about 280, 285. Deron Payne is about 300. And Johnny Newton, who was a rookie last year, was in that 280 range, right? So they needed another guy up front. So he gives them something they didn't have. How effective he's going to be, we'll see. But he does fill a hole for them. I think Wise and, you know, Javon Kinlaw to me will be the most interesting one, because what we've seen in San Francisco and the Jets is a guy who has traits but hasn't been consistent enough. Will he be that guy here? How do they plan to use him? Because, you know, they have Adam Peters and Daryl Tapp, the defensive line coach, were both with him in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. They know him well. Dan Quinn may cut his teeth coaching the defensive line. He knows how he wants to use him. So I think they have a plan to use him. We'll see how effective he is in that role. But he has the traits that are enticing. But again, like when you watch him, there's an inconsistency to it. Will he be more consistent? But what I do like with the line is that, again, there's more depth. So when you look at like the experience they have, is way greater than it was last year. And I think, so like they're bringing in guys last year who were cut from a few times by other teams or seventh round picks. They were a key part of the rotation. I don't think that's going to happen this year. So I just think there's going to be more consistency. And the whole thing is like they brought in, got more guys who could stop the run. What they don't have is that edge rusher who's got that dynamic ability. That's where I think the 29th pick is. Could they find that guy there? Or in the second round, there are a couple of guys that are intriguing beyond the first round. That's where I think they look. But then the rest of the defense, linebacker, same Bobby Wagner, had a really good year. Will he be better protected by that defensive front? In the secondary, Jonathan Jones helps. But losing Chin, I think that's Will Harris. I like what I've seen, but I think Chin is better. So, you know, it's not like it's they improved all over. I think Jones is an improvement, gives them better depth, if nothing else, and flexibility. But I think there are still definite questions about that group. But what I, like I said, with, you know, I'm probably answering another question within this answer, but with the 29th pick, if you go get a defensive end, that you don't have to have him be an instant impact guy as far as like every down, right? You have run stoppers, you have a good group. This guy just needs to come in and help in this area. Let him grow like that. Give him a specific thing to do. And I think that's where, so like that's another area, but that's something I think they could definitely use as a young pass rushing end.
You answered my question, because with the 29th pick, I guess they would look for an edge defender because there is a great base, but maybe to have the highs in this defense, which can develop for sure. I mean, there are still young guys. Marshon Lattimore, I think he can play much better than he did after he came from the Saints.
Ristel, pretty nice guy, I think.
He did a good job in the first year. I have to jump back to the offense, because there was a big topic last year with the Texans. CJ Stroud had a great first year, and then there was a downfall, not because of him, to be honest. The team, the O-line did work. Now the Commanders did so much for Daniels. Do you have a feeling that that could happen with him like it happened with CJ Stroud? My feeling is it's a completely different situation.
Correct. And I agree with you on that. And they're different quarterbacks. And, you know,
absolutely, as well.
I think CJ Stroud is a very good quarterback. Listen, I went to Ohio State. I watched him in college. I like watching the guy. I think he's very good, but it is a different situation. So, you know, and their line did not do a good job protecting him. And so I think that's one thing to help mitigate that. You've got to protect him more, right? So I think that's one thing. It's also like, it's hard to play great year to year. I think, you know, we've seen Patrick Mahomes and what he's done and what Brady did. But for most quarterbacks, there's going to be a slight, it could be one year might be just better than the other. And sometimes, listen, man, sometimes it's like these guys might be playing tougher teams next year. That could contribute
absolutely,
to it as
yeah.
well. Like they're playing Kansas City. They're at Minnesota. They're at Green Bay. Like those are, they're at the Chargers. Those are good teams, but really good defenses. So that can contribute to things as well, which is why you need to enhance the talent around him. I think one thing that helps Jaden is that CJ can run, but Jaden Daniels is obviously one of the best runners in the NFL as a quarterback, but he can extend plays, and that's going to help him as well to soften some of that blow. I think the other thing is that helps, you know, the good thing for both those quarterbacks, but especially for Daniels, because I know him better, is how much extra work he puts into things, the film study, et cetera. Like that, so while defensive coordinators are going to be looking, how do they scheme to stop him? He's going to be analyzing his game and then also theirs as well. I can guarantee that. And same with Cliff Kingsbury. Like the difference between here and Houston, Bobby Slowick had one good year as an offensive coordinator. We didn't really know, like, was it him? Was it CJ? And Tank Dell and this and that? Then we found out last year, I mean, he got fired. He's fired for a reason. So. Mm-hmm. Kingsbury is an experienced play caller and from college and the NFL. Like that was the first time Slowick had done that. So I think that experience will help as well. And so I think one thing Kingsbury has shown is the ability to evolve his offense. You know, that air raid that he came in the NFL with looks a lot different than what he's running right now in Washington. So, you know, I think all that helps. But the bottom line is, who the heck knows? Because again, the schedule is tougher, right?
Yeah,
and the defenses are better. So it may not be a slump as much as it is, hey, sometimes you just play better teams.
Yeah, that's true. And maybe, John, maybe a quick last question is, because you mentioned Cliff Kingsbury, of course, he had a better second part of the season as he did years before, but that's another topic. The last 2 years, maybe in Washington, there was like ownership and stuff. We do not want to talk about this anymore, but there was a new feeling, like everybody was hyped with the Commanders. Jaden Daniels and everybody did a great job. They had that playoff run. Now, with the free agency being said so far on paper, there are a few pluses and upgrades done. Do you think the pressure is also more on Jaden Daniels or the team, especially everybody, at least with the Commanders, because the fans are expecting more, or the league and everybody's watching expecting more because of last season and now the guys coming in?
There's definitely going to be more higher expectations with that. Whether they feel the pressure or not, the expectations have been greatly raised. And, you know, that's a good thing for this place, right? Now, I know there are a lot of fans here are going to be like, yeah, but in the past they'd have this good year and this. And until this group does it, people are going to remember the past when it comes to following up a good year. So yes, there will be a little bit more pressure. I don't worry about that. Like, Dan Quinn has been through this as a head coach, right? You know, Kingsbury's been through this. Jaden Daniels had high expectations when he came in the NFL because he had won the Heisman and what he did at LSU in his last year in college. So, like, these are people who are, you know, and I can tell you being around Daniels, I don't think the pressure doesn't bother him, right? Mm-hmm. It's amazing how relaxed and how normal he is in the locker room. Like, he'd much rather tease Bobby Wagner than sit there and beat his chest about how good he is, right? So, like, I think, and having experienced guys, Wagner, Zach Ertz, Austin Eckler, Terry McLaurin, that also helps. But the bottom line is the expectations have definitely been raised. I think the the one thing going for them in that regard is that the Eagles are still in their division and people know that they're still going to be really good next year because that's just who they are. So it's not a Super Bowl or bust year, but it is one where people are like, okay, what do you do for an encore? You know, can you match, like, whether or not you win 12 games, it's going to be tough to do that, but can you get back to the playoffs and win another playoff game? Because they have not won back-to-back playoff games since in consecutive years since 1991-92. That's the last time. So if they can go do that, that would be a good showing for them. Then show that, okay, they're building it right. This is now a team that you can say year to year should be in contention.
Oh, wow. So much interesting fact. I think we could talk for much more minutes again. John, thank you very much for your time.
Also auch da ähnliche Thematiken, Hashtag Running Back Position und ja, die Commanders viel gemacht, noch ein paar Fragezeichen, wie die Jungs alle reinkommen werden, aber definitiv John Kyle, mit dem haben wir es ja auch in der Aufzeichnung gesagt, ich glaube, den rufe ich nochmal privat an und spreche mit ihm einfach ein bisschen, sehr, sehr sympathischer Kerl.
Ich glaube, es ist schon sehr, zu sehr spüren gewesen, also Washington ist das wahrscheinlich spannendste Team. Ja. Da hätte ich auch 20 Stunden reden können über die.
Das stimmt, aber Christoph, wenn du ehrlich bist, sagst vor allen Dingen du als auch ich das gefühlt über jedes Team.
Das stimmt, was weil ja auch alle irgendwo spannend gerade sind in der Phase, aber ich finde, die Commanders sind schon.
Ja, hast schon recht.
Ah, die finde ich schon. Ja. Würde mich nicht wundern, wenn die, weiß ich nicht, die Sunday Night Football Rate um 400% steigern. Ich weiß nicht, wie viel sie hatten, aber die Night Games zumindest um eine hohe Prozentzahl steigern nächstes Jahr.
Ja. Wir sind, das wird auf jeden Fall cool. Hoffentlich auch weiterhin so spektakulär wie in der vergangenen Saison. Nach dem Draft wissen wir dann ja auch mehr.
Lass mir den Übergang machen. Ein wahnsinnig spannendes Team. Richtig interessant. Ein Knaller-Team nächstes Jahr.
Also das finde ich, muss ich sagen, schon fast am spannendsten jetzt, was jetzt kommt.
Okay. Ja. Wir müssen noch eine vierte Steigerungsform uns überlegen. Nee,
wir brauchen einfach nur mal ein anderes Wort für spannend. Ich glaube, da müssen wir mal nach Synonymen googeln.
Dann auf jeden Fall geht es gleich um die Denver Broncos mit Cody Rock von Mile High Sports. Erstmal danke an Cody, denn das wisst ihr nicht, aber der hat einen Wasserschaden daheim. Da war nicht ganz klar, ob die Aufnahme klappt. Der hat zwischen Begutachten vom Handwerker und seinem eigentlichen Job nochmal Zeit für uns gefunden. Ja, von dem her, Cody, vielen Dank und jetzt ab dafür. Cody, we want to talk a little bit about the Broncos because I guess it's one of the most interesting teams this offseason so far. I hope you're with my opinion.
Yeah, no, I think they've made a lot of moves that have certainly kind of moved the needle and have generated a lot of conversation, especially with the defensive moves that they've made, signing Talanoa Hufanga and Dre Greenlaw away from the 49ers. 49ers fans, 49ers media members were looking at those moves and saying, wow, that's a big loss. For that team specifically, as we know, the 49ers are going through a lot of changes that, you know, they've moved on from a lot of guys. They've had to, as they look to extend Brock Purdy and try to make some other moves, even though they still have, some offensive talent intact there. But for Denver, I mean, these are two big moves that they've made that have really bolstered the defense. And then they go out and they get Evan Engram, who it fits that category exactly what Sean Payton was looking for as a joker type player, a guy who's got elite level receiving skills at the tight end position. They're going to play him in line. They're going to move him around quite a bit. Like, he's not just going to be lined up specifically at one spot, but he's going to be a little bit of a chess piece for Sean Payton to use this upcoming season.
Yeah, maybe we can also start with the defense because you mentioned it first. They also extended with DJ Jones. So they have like three pillars, three anchor faces in all the three lines, so to say. How do you see the defense for the Denver Broncos with the new two faces, of course, they are stars, but they were also injured a lot, of course. How does your opinion to the defense overall?
Well, I mean, certainly it was a good defense last year. The last five games of the season, they kind of fell off a little bit. They allowed a lot of explosive plays. The inside linebackers got tested a little bit. They had a harder time getting after some quarterbacks and stopping the run in some games. It definitely came back to bite them late down the season, especially in a couple of games where they could have clinched against the Chargers, the Cincinnati Bengals. We saw what happened in the playoff game against the Buffalo Bills. The defense was on the field for over 42 minutes of that game there. So they just couldn't get off. And so when you get a guy like Drake Greenlaw, linebacker, who provides you the ability to cover you know, the middle of the field there to serve as a guy who can cover and help out with tight ends if you need to, but also can cover running backs one-on-one, but can also be a volatile player when you blitz him. I mean, that's a great addition there. Not to mention how he plays against the run. Talanoa Hufanga, as you mentioned, a guy who, you know, plays with his hair on fire, so to speak. And, you know, he's smart. And in this scheme for Vance Joseph, it's not necessarily a free safety or strong safety designation. Both the safeties have to know how to be able to play strong and free. One guy's not just going to be pigeonholed in the same position. So, you know, you pair Hufanga and Brandon Jones up together, I think that's a really good addition right now on paper. I think Denver's defense is drastically better right now on paper than they were all of last season, and they can stay healthy. You know, there's certain things that they can build upon. And then you got Nick Bonito, Jonathan Cooper on the outside there. Nick Bonito emerged into the conversation of NFL Defensive Player of the Year last year for the run that he went on. It was the first year that Denver's defense had two pass rushers, or even one pass rusher for that matter, hit double-digit sacks since 2018. So they're climbing in the right direction. And right now they're in a position where they can add depth overall, I think, to other positions, you know, on the defensive line, linebacker, cornerback. They like their safety group. They like their corner group. I think the defense right now is as stout as it's going to be. I think that they're going to add in the NFL draft, though, to really boost this team going forward, I think, on the offensive side of the ball.
Mm-hmm. Because, to be honest, I was surprised how good this defense was last year. I've never expected such a defense. And I think you built the foundation. Now you have a Hufanga, a Greenlaw, when they are fit, when they're available. So from the defensive perspective, it sounds good so far. Not so many things to address in the draft now.
Yeah.
Of course, you can always get depth, become better, but not so many holes.
Yeah, I think if they add in the draft to defense, I think it'll, you know, they'll add a cornerback for depth. But I think they maybe, you know, if they add any defensive position, I imagine it's probably going to be on the defensive line. They want to continue to make what they believe is the strength of their team. They want to continue to invest and make that stronger. That's something that George Payton has said, you know, dating back to the NFL Combine just a couple of months ago. So I think that's going to be the emphasis we see from them. I think it's really going to be offensive-centric. Adding maybe one or two defensive pieces here or there. They really like what they've got. And obviously, they're going to be adding undrafted rookie free agents when the draft concludes. And that's where they really kind of made hay in the last, I don't know how many handful of years. They've identified one player who's made the 53-man roster as an undrafted guy. I think that trend will continue. They're in a good spot, in my opinion, right now. Defense is pretty loaded right now. And now you get an opportunity while Bo Nix is on a rookie contract to build the offense and add pieces around him, which I think is going to be the priority here for Sean Payton.
And do you think the pieces are also addressed, of course, with Evan Engram? They have a few young guys as Bo Nix himself and Devon Vele, for example. They had Cortland Sutton, the veteran. Now Evan Engram, a very experienced guy. How do you see the skill positions or the pass catchers for Bo Nix?
Yeah, look, I mean, you got his top third down target, Cortland Sutton, and obviously the team is going to be working on a contract extension for him, either leading up to the draft or a little bit after the draft. I know he's a priority player for them to take care of, and, you know, you want to, right? That's Bo Nix's top target. You know, you move on from him, it's like, what are you doing? You got to, you know, soon to be second-year quarterback, you take away his best weapon. And it's like, how do you equip him to be successful? You know, so Cortland's a big priority for them. They really like their young guys. Marvin Mims obviously came on strong in the second half of last season, and I think he's going to have a little bit more of an expanded role here going forward. The addition of Evan Engram allows them to be a little bit more creative with how they can use Marvin too, which is exciting. They like Troy Franklin a lot. I think internally from, you know, some people I have spoken to, they really think that Troy Franklin's going to have a much bigger role offensively this upcoming season, especially with the departure of Lil Jordan Humphrey. Though I don't think Franklin will take Lil Jordan Humphrey's spot that he played last year. I think that's going to go a little bit more to Devon Vele, who was obviously drafted in the seventh round of last year's draft there. And expect to see Vele, you know, a little bit more downfield here for the Broncos as a downfield threat too. And, you know, with Ingram's addition, now you can be very creative. Your scheme can open things up a little bit. But the top priority here for Denver this offseason is really going to be addressing the running back position. And really, this year's draft class is loaded with a ton of players that, you know, this might be the best running back draft class we've seen in quite some time. We could see a handful of backs taking around one. And obviously, I think a handful taking around two. The quality is there this year. And the Broncos are in a prime position to do that. And I think running back is probably going to be where they're looking here in round one.
Before Christopher is saying something, because I know he has a question about the running backs, Cortland Sutton, are still question marks, or do you think there will be positive that he will stay in Denver? Because you're, of course, covering the Broncos.
Yeah, no, I think he stays. I think he's proved in the last 2 years. I mean, you look at his production, he's had 18 touchdowns in two seasons. He's stayed healthy. He's been a reliable go-to option. You look at the numbers that he and obviously Bo Nix had together. Big body possession receiver. That's something that Sean Payton really values. He's a good blocker on the outside perimeter. He's just a player who I feel like we saw flashes at the beginning of his career as to what he could be. Then he had the ACL injury in 2020. Mm-hmm. Since then, I think we've seen Cortland playing his best football. And I still think his peak level, I still think we're in that window, that 2 to 3 year window. I think Cortland is still going to probably put up the best numbers that he's had in his entire career, and he's only getting better. And now when you add more pieces around, it takes all the pressure off of Cortland to be just the primary number one guy, because defenses late in the season, they were bracket covering Cortland Sutton on third down and saying, hey, we want the Broncos to beat us with these younger guys. We're going to take away Cortland Sutton. So now you add offensive pieces around the board. Theoretically, on paper, that should create more one-on-one opportunities for Cortland Sutton, and those other guys are going to get chances to make plays on the football as well. So I think keeping Cortland Sutton balances this offense entirely. I don't think he's going anywhere.
Mm-hmm. I don't have only one question. I have two questions regarding the wide receivers and the running backs. Because you mentioned that the wide receivers, maybe I start with this question first. Do you expect them to get a real number two? Or is there a number two in this roster? I just watched the death chart today. I mean, Marvin Mims, I expect him to get a maybe bigger role to be more, let's say, competitive. Vele had a good year, I would say. You mentioned Troy Franklin, but it's not a wide receiver core. I say, oh, come on, that's the best wide receiver core in the league. So maybe number two next to Cortland Sutton would help, probably.
I think they would like to do that. And there are a couple of veteran free agents that are on the market right now that probably make the most sense. Realistically speaking, there are two names that probably make the most sense to add to be a number two guy. And not saying that number two guy is going to have the second most targets or the second mm-hmm. most catches.
Yeah,
this season,
for sure.
But more so just a guy who is a proven, you know, he's been proven in the NFL before, right? Keenan Allen and Amari Cooper are the two names there. Look, mm-hmm. there's some veteran guys like Deontay Johnson. Stephon Diggs was one of those guys. Now he's going to the New England Patriots. Diggs would not have been a good locker room fit here in Denver based on, you know, what Sean Payton wants from this group. Deontay Johnson, considering what we've seen from him in the last year and a half of, you know, being released by a couple of teams due to conduct detrimental stuff, that he's not going to be a locker room fit as well. So realistically, you get two guys. You get a guy like Keenan Allen, who's still a pretty good route runner, reliable pass catcher for you on third down if need be. He's just a guy who's proven, right? Because in the playoffs, what we saw is, you know, when Cortland Sutton was getting covered, you needed to find a way to go to these young guys. Devon Vele had several drops in that playoff game against the Bills. Troy Franklin had one. Cortland had a really key drop that ended what could have been a promising drive there, I think, in that first half or late in that first half there against the Bills. So I think they're still looking at going out and getting the guy, and I think they'll probably have conversations with Keenan Allen. Maybe Amari Cooper, maybe they've already had those conversations. But, yeah, I don't think that they're just going to go in with the status quo of saying, hey, mm-hmm. all right, we're going with Cortland again. We know these younger guys are going to have a little bit of a bigger role this season, but I think they need to have an insurance policy in place. And so Keenan Allen and Amari Cooper are the two names that make the most sense right now.
It would be interesting because they get attention away from Sutton, from the young guns. So, yeah, it would be completely make sense because the running back position, it's the topic of our episode today, Flo, the running back position. Is this the biggest need? I think the Broncos pick number 20, you already mentioned it. First round pick could be a running back. Marion Hampton, for example, could be at that spot, more or less a very good choice. What is your feeling? As you mentioned, number 20 could be a running back.
Yeah, I would not be shocked if the Broncos go around. I'm on board with it. I'm okay with it. Usually I'm the type of guy every year. The last couple of years have been like, I don't know if you want to draft a running back, you know, round one, positional value. We get into those conversations. And then, you know, as I've gotten older, I've changed my ways a little bit.
Since Jahmyr Gibbs, I guess, right? So like everybody.
You know, that's a great example. You look at a guy like Jahmyr Gibbs, the Detroit Lions, they were being torn apart for taking Jahmyr Gibbs. They're like, wow, exactly. You never draft a running back round one. And then look at Jahmyr Gibbs. He ends up being one of the most electrifying players in the league. So I think if you as a general manager, as a head coach, have conviction that a player gives you something that you do not have, you have to go out there and you have to take that calculated risk there. I wouldn't even be shocked if the Broncos double dip at running back in this year's draft. Look, you mentioned Omari and Hampton out of North Carolina. I like what I see from him. You know, he's got the tools to be a three down back. He's explosive. He can be a pass catcher for you out of the backfield. That's a big dynamic that Sean Payton really wants. And look, he's even got some joker traits to him. Travion Henderson, running back out of Ohio State. I mean, Ohio State's got two backs with Henderson and Quinshon Judkins that I would be okay if Denver landed either one of those guys. Henderson, I would want the Broncos to take at 20 if Hampton was not there. I'd want them to take Hampton if he was available. I don't know about Judkins in round one, though. I think I'd be more comfortable if the Broncos went a different position in round one and Judkins was available in round two. I'd be okay with that. Round one, a little less likely. But I think that the biggest hole right here for the Broncos is finding a truly established running back here for Sean Payton to try to find his magic with. And I think that's going to be where they go here ultimately with pick number 20.
Yeah, they had like four, I guess, last season with minutes on the field. And do you think, or maybe the feeling is they could also trade down or trade up in some point, because we also talked about it, Christoph and I. There are a lot of guys or a lot of teams who need running backs and have also not only the running back position, but similar needs. And maybe the Broncos can use that to get some more draft picks. And are fine if there's some good, maybe two running backs in round two and four or something like this. Is this something you have in mind?
Yeah, no, I think it's very possible here. As we know, Sean Payton, in his history of being with the New Orleans Saints, there were times where they traded up quite a bit. And look, you know, you could have a jump, you know, five spots, four spots, even two spots if you wanted to. I think that moving up where Denver's at right now, a few spots would not hurt them in terms of, you know, having to give up some back end capital. I think that Denver is going to stay put at 20, though. I think unless there's a guy that they feel really confident with that they feel like is going to be off the board before they're able to pick within the striking range of two or three picks, I think they stay put at 20. They could initially trade back and acquire more back end capital. I don't think that's going to be what they do, though. I think that they like the overall amount of talent and some skill player positions, whether it be running back, tight end, D-line, receiver this year is definitely questionable, I think, in the draft. But I could see them – I think they stay put or they trade up. I don't think that they're going to trade back necessarily. Now, they have been in Sean's 2 years here. They have conducted two draft day trades. You know, obviously a little bit later round, I think it was a day two trade for Adam Trautman and Sean Payton's first year from the New Orleans Saints. And then last year we saw them trade with the New York Jets to get John Franklin Myers. I think that trend will probably continue, and I'll say probably keep an eye on a cornerback. Damari Mathis is one of those names that could be traded on draft day specifically. I'm trying to think of some other names here on the roster as well. That really honestly seems like the only guy for like the Broncos who might pair one draft pick and obviously the player to maybe move up or get additional capital. I do expect him to make another draft day trade, though. We'll see how it pans out.
If you watch the Broncos in general, what is your impression, your feeling for the new season? It was a very good last season. The development was very good under Sean Payton. On the other hand, the Nuggets are very successful in Denver. The Avalanche are successful in Denver. The Rockies not so much, to be honest. But now the Broncos are normally the third team to get the high expectations in the city or in the area.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'll say this, you know, for as much success as the Nuggets and the Avalanche have had over the last handful of years, it's kind of been a saving grace while the Broncos have tried to figure their stuff out. But now all of a sudden with the Broncos being good again or being in the conversation of the expectations are much higher than they have been, the excitement level, even though that the Avalanche right now, I mean, the Avalanche are, since the trade deadline, have been on an absolute tear. The Nuggets are kind of falling off right now. Nikola Jokic is obviously banged up, but they're struggling to play defense, and you know, some of their personnel moves that they made in the offseason under Calvin Booth have not gone the way they had hoped for. So, you know, the Nuggets are kind of spiraling out here. The Avalanche are right now probably the most secure team in terms of where they're heading, and the Broncos have just this momentum to them that's trending upwards. It's exciting. And look, for as popular as all those teams have been, nothing in terms of like coverage-wise here, the Broncos are always the most popular in terms of coverage and talking points, even though those other teams are doing really good. So that I think that's kind of the exciting thing about a market like Denver is that like people love their football. They love their Broncos football. You know, you got a lot of diehards that have been around since the Pat Bowlen days where the standard is championship or bust. You know, we believe in competing for championships every year. Denver hasn't been up, you know, holding up to that standard in quite some time since, you know, Super Bowl 50. But I think they're heading in the right direction. There's a lot of excitement about this team, you know, and fans are very confident in Bo Nix now being the franchise quarterback for them. And Sean Payton has done a lot. Like he's taken what, you know, we all looked at as a really bad team 2 years ago after Nathaniel Hackett. And he's turned them all of a sudden into this young and hungry, exciting team that people are now starting to talk a little bit more about. So they just got to keep climbing. But it's exciting times, you know, for people here in Denver.
Yeah, great to hear.
And maybe the last question is, because you mentioned it, of course, maybe the bond between Bo Nix and Sean Payton. By the way, I love the connection Bo Nix and Devon Vele, because I love the young guys when they have spectacular moments. At the beginning of last season, critics would say, like, Sean Payton as a mastermind head coach, maybe he's overloading young guys and also Bo Nix. But as the longer the season was going on, the better bond and the better connection there was. With all this offseason so far in the free agency, what do you think is Sean Payton able to do with Bo Nix and the Denver Broncos overall?
Well, I mean, they had a really strong bond, and Sean, you know, Sean will play it off. You know, he's focused, but Sean was very, very giddy over having Bo Nix and being able to get him. That was his guy. He pinpointed all along that they wanted in the draft this year. And they were a little worried that maybe the Rams are going to try to trade up to get Bo Nix. But you know, for that relationship between those two guys, Sean threw a lot at Bo, threw a lot of material, a lot of personnel stuff, and a lot of install at him. And he did a really good job responding with it. And there were moments, obviously, you know, Bo is a rookie. He's going to go through some learning pains and growing pains and things like that. But you almost never saw it necessarily. You felt like his growing pains really came in the first 2 weeks of the regular season against Seattle and against the Pittsburgh Steelers, where he struggled. And then from that point forward, you know, he goes on a little bit of a tear. You know, he throws his first touchdown in week 4 of the regular season, and then he goes on to lead all rookies with passing touchdowns, overall touchdowns. That, to me, was impressive to see from Bo Nix, just what he was able to take and to keep stacking and gathering. I only imagine that relationship and that bond's going to continue to strengthen here over the offseason. Bo's already gotten all his offseason material that Sean wants him to kind of look over and master, and Bo's taking that preparation stuff very seriously. You know, there's good balance between, you know, hey, it's vacation, but Bo's in that mindset now. I think he's going to get back from vacation here, I think later on this week, and then it's back to work, because then team workouts will begin, you know, in April, OTAs in May, and then a little bit into June, and then there's that dead period for about 5 weeks right into training camp. So, I think that is going to be a huge strength for them. But Sean and George, I think they're adamant on building the best team around them that they possibly can here with Bo Nix.
Yeah, sounds promising for the Broncos fan also in Germany. Cody, thanks very much for your time. Really appreciate.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Ja, also das war doch mal auch sehr, sehr interessant. Danke nochmal, wie gesagt, mit den Handwerkern im Haus zu eigentlich.
Zwischen Tür und Angel, absolut, ja, in dem Fall wortwörtlich Tür und Angel, leider.
Die Angel tatsächlich, die, egal.
Ich kenne es von zu Hause, es ist SCH.
Hast du auch schon mal gehabt?
Gab es bei uns daheim auch mal, ja.
Oh, das ist.
Da war zum Glück nur der Keller vollgelaufen, aber ich sag's dir so, das war scheiße.
Ja, das glaube ich. Ja, auf jeden Fall drei sehr interessante Teams.
Lass uns noch ganz kurz zu Cody sprechen, weil das ist jetzt nicht in der Aufnahme drin, aber off-air, und wir haben es im Teasertext nochmal angekündigt.
Ja,
die Broncos könnten tatsächlich, oder es ist ein heißes Gerücht, dass die Broncos das Team sind, das gegen die Colts in Berlin spielt. Was sagen wir dazu, Flo? Wenn das wirklich so ist, das finden wir schon sehr spannend.
Also
oder?
Das ist schon mega cool, als er das so gesagt hat. The expectations are there, hat er gesagt.
Genau, also
so
uns hat das gesagt, Wortlaut. Nicht in der Aufnahme, sondern uns hat das gesagt.
So war sein Wortlaut, und ich finde es mega cool, weil erstens haben wir die Denver Broncos in dieser Folge nicht von ungefähr, weil wir sie wirklich spannend finden, und das ist jetzt echt nicht so
ein Quatsch. Das spannendste Team überhaupt aller Zeiten.
Nein, wirklich ernsthaft. Ich finde dieses junge Team mit Sean Payton und so, haben wir gerade drüber gesprochen, mega geil. Und dann in Deutschland zu sehen, die Broncos auch, glaube ich, eine ganz gute Fanbase in Deutschland. Mhm. Also das wird schon cool, und ich will einfach nur Devon Vele treffen. Den finde ich mega. Also einfach mal aus Eigeninteresse, liebe DAZN-Chefs, falls ihr Christoph und mich wieder hinschicken wollt nach Berlin. Es ist das Olympiastadion. So, und dann mit den Broncos noch, das wäre schon mega geil.
Damit gehe ich, wenn wir hingehen dürfen, zu den Colts. Alles klar, ist eingetütet. Aber sagt uns gerne eure Meinung. Also es ist natürlich noch nichts offiziell, logischerweise. Das kommt ja erst, wenn der Spielplan raus ist. Aber was hättet ihr für ein Gefühl bei Colts gegen Broncos? Mich nimmt's mit, weil ich gerade die Broncos wahnsinnig spannend finde.
Und damit schließen wir diese wahnsinnig spannende Folge.
Wir melden uns nächste Woche. Da geht es dann, wie gesagt, das erste Mal um den Draft. Und dann schauen wir auch Richtung Draft in den kommenden Wochen. Und dann gehen wir euch einfach mit weiteren spannendsten Teams und Spielern auf den Senkel mit euch zusammen. Hat mich sehr gefreut. Danke an die drei Jungs. Danke, Christoph. Over and out.
Tschö, tschö. Und euch wünsche ich die spannendste Woche aller Zeiten. Nein, ich muss ja flüstern. Die spannendste Woche aller Zeiten.